Right. We're in Genesis chapter 27, the end of chapter 27. Genesis 27. We have seen the supplanter, Jacob, the deceiver, and he has not only taken Esau's birthright, but here in chapter 27, he also took Esau's blessing, the one that Isaac intended for Esau. And we find that this has greatly angered Esau. So in verse 41, it said that Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, "The days of mourning for my father are at hand, then I will kill my brother Jacob." And the words of Esau were, older son were told to Rebekah, so she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, "Surely your brother Esau comforts himself concerning you by intending to kill you. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice, arise, flee to my brother Laban in Haran, and stay with him a few days, until your brother's fury turns away, until your brother's anger turns away from you, and he forgets what you have done to him. And I will send and bring you from there. Why should I be bereaved also of you both in one day?" And Rebekah said to Isaac, "I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob takes a wife of the daughters of Heth, like these who are the daughters of the land, what good will my life be to me?" All right, so we have the closing of, or we have a chapter division there, so we might as well stop, even though, you know, these chapter divisions aren't all that great. They're good for some things, but they were put in by men after all, so kind of cuts some things up. But at any rate, what we have here is the response of Esau after what Jacob had done in taking the blessing that was intended for him by Isaac. We talked about how Isaac tried to bless Esau to be the one who would still kind of basically be the superior, be that firstborn, even though he's lost that birthright. We have Isaac blessing him as the superior one, but you know, Jacob the supplanter has come in, and he was the one really giving that blessing to his blinded father Isaac of old age. And so he receives that blessing of that superiority and being the one who will rule over all of his brethren. And this is precisely what God had said when they were still in the womb, that Jacob would rule over his brethren and rule over and be superior over his brother Esau. So we have seen that Jacob has been able to climb the ranks, if you will, through a variety of deceptions already. So starting with the taking of the birthright, and now with the taking of the blessing. So he's kind of, you know, he's got it all. And Esau's response here is one of hatred, and he intends to kill Jacob. After his father passes, he desires to kill Jacob, but he's going to wait until his father passes. So Rebekah has understood the intentions of Esau here, and that's when she tells Jacob, "You need to go away. Go to my brother Laban. Travel to him and be there a few days, and I'll notify you when the coast is clear and, you know, your brother has calmed down, has cooled off a little bit." And of course, we know from the next chapters that Jacob's going to be there much longer than a few days. He'll be there, you know, 14 plus, you know, years. At any rate, a lot of good fortune comes to him by leaving the land at that time and going to Laban. So, one of the other things to note there is the end of verse or end of the chapter where it said that Rebecca, she says, "I'm weary of my life." I think the ESV says, "I loathe my life," and so she has such disdain for her life, for her existence in the particular area in which they are among these sons of Heth. So these peoples around of the land were not good. And, you know, not a whole lot of detail is given. But we know that you know, Abraham didn't want Isaac marrying anyone around these areas. And we see that Esau, you know, he jumped in full force and married it within the areas around. And in fact, he went ahead and doubled up and married two. And so, you know, what did the text say that at the end of chapter 26 and verse 35, that these wives of Esau, these two wives, were a grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah, his parents. So they were a grief of mind to them. And so they were definitely leading, partially, I guess, leading Esau more so astray in their ways, evidently. Now, we have Rebekah here at the end of 27 kind of repeating this idea that the daughters of Heth are causing her to loathe her life. They have made her so weary. They have made her so tired that she just has disdain for life itself. So that's a part of all of this, where she points out in the middle of verse 46 that if Jacob takes a wife of one of these daughters of Heth, then you know, my life is over. You know, there's no more worth the living here. And so really what we have here is a twofold solution. If Jacob can be sent to Laban in Padan Aram, then he is safe from Esau. Esau wants to kill him right now. He's safe from that. But also, she secretly, you know, she wants him to stumble upon a wife among her own kin in those areas. We saw this with Abraham wanting to do this with Isaac, and he did do it with Isaac. And now we have Isaac's son, Jacob, and it's going to happen for him as well. And Esau, you know, he's left to the wayside. It's interesting. And we'll learn more about that in this next chapter. So in the 28th chapter in verse 1, we have Isaac about to pass in very old age. And it says, "Then Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said to him, 'You shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. Arise, go to Padan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take yourself a wife from there of the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. May God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may be an assembly of peoples and give you the blessing of Abraham, to you and your descendants with you, that you may inherit the land in which you are a stranger, which God gave to Abraham.' So Isaac sent Jacob away, and he went to Padan Aram to Laban, the son of Bethuel the Syrian, the brother of Rebekah, the mother of Jacob and Esau. Now this here, this first section of 28 is quite interesting, quite significant, where we have Isaac really for the first time that we have seen Isaac in this light. This is not even the Isaac of chapter 27. The Isaac of chapter 27, he didn't call Jacob. He called Esau. Esau, come, I want to bless you. And what did he say? He blessed him that you know, your brethren will bow to you. And as we said, Jacob stole that blessing. But at any rate, what we find here is a different Isaac. And he's got a different mind. And of course, we know that he's been plagued from, we saw that from chapter 26, that he's been plagued with the choices of marriage for Esau, what Esau had done. And his wives have made Jacob, has made Isaac and Rebekah very weary. But so here he tells Jacob, I want you to go away from here. I don't want you to marry a daughter of Canaan. I want you to go to your mother's household and take yourself a wife from there, the daughters of Laban. So remain in that family tree. Now, what we find with him in this blessing here in verses 3 and 4 is what is so striking to me. As I said, such a different Isaac than the previous chapter, where he has surrendered to the fact that it's all in Jacob. It's not Esau. Of course, he loved Esau. He loved that he was a hunter. He loved that he loved the game that he ate. But he has definitely surrendered finally to the idea that Jacob's the one. Jacob's the one God has chosen, not the one I chose and really tried my hardest to get in above the race in front, but it's got to be Jacob. And so here this blessing, you know, is so reminiscent, of course, of the things that had been said by God to Abraham and then to Isaac. And now it's being said through Isaac to Jacob. This idea of being fruitful and multiplying to be an assembly of peoples. And verse 4 is the most critical point when he says, and give you the blessing of Abraham. The idea is that the blessing is going to continue in Jacob. All right, what God had promised to Abraham would continue through the line and lineage of Jacob and not Esau, which it was the original hope of Isaac. So it's going to be Jacob. The blessings, the promises, the great nation of Abraham, was going to come through Jacob and not Esau. And it's Jacob who would inherit the land of promise, what God had promised Abraham. This is going to be given to Jacob. So very, very monumentous occasion here in this what is said to Jacob by his father Isaac. And so he departs in verse 5, as we read. Now, take a look at what happens in verse 6. This is, it kind of makes me chuckle just to see how what Esau does in this situation. In verse 6, Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him away to Padan Aram to take himself a wife from there, and that he blessed him, and that as he blessed him, he gave him a charge, saying, you shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. And that Jacob had obeyed his father and his mother and had gone to Padan Aram. Also, Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan did not please his father Isaac. So Esau went to Ishmael and took Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebajith, to be his wife in addition to the wives he had. So you just picture what Esau is doing here. And it's just, you know, in every way, he just, he misses the boat every time. But not only has he gotten himself, you know, his parents just loathe the two wives that he had picked out for himself. And he's looking at this situation and he sees what his father, you know, of course he loves his father, and he sees what his father is saying to Jacob. You know, I want you to go, I don't want you to take of the daughters of Canaan. You know, I want you to go to Padan Aram. And so he's heard all these things. Well, notice how he translates this for himself. You know, he's got these wives, you know, already of, you know, the daughters of Canaan, essentially. And so he knows this does not please his parents by any means. And so what does he do? But in verse 9, he goes to the household of Ishmael. And he obtains a wife there from Ishmael. It's a daughter of Ishmael. And it's, you know, it's just interesting that, you know, he's looking around at his situation and how to please his father and his mother and how to maybe turn some things around, you know, or correct his life. Maybe even receive a better blessing or something. I don't know, but you know, he goes about it the wrong way as he turns to Ishmael, because of course Ishmael's not of the people of Canaan. Ishmael is from Abraham and Hagar the Egyptian, and so Ishmael is a half Egyptian, but and so this is by no means a daughter of Canaan, but nevertheless, this is the daughter of one who is not of you know, really that stock of Abraham, if you will, and so it's interesting to kind of try to see the psychology here, and to look at the mind of Esau, to see what he attempts to do as he notices, this doesn't please my, you know, parents. So what can I do? Well, here's Ishmael. You know, that's not the people of Canaan, and so he takes another wife in addition to the wives that he has, and you know this. Doesn't seem to, you know, really doesn't seem to change anything, you know, for his life or the way that his parents are towards him, but it is fascinating to see one who is, you know, he's trying. That's definite here in the text, is he's trying, but he's missing the mark. He's missing the idea. Now, yes.
You really think he seems like a renegade to me, and it all goes back to chapter 25 when God was explaining, you know, Sarah was, or Rebecca was talking about. When he's talking about the two nations in her womb, she was talking about in the previous verse, if all is well, why am I like this? Why am I? Mm-hmm.
Right.
Why didn't he tell him? You know, that saved a lot of trouble. Well,
Right.
And now he goes and marries Edomites. I think Ishmael was the right. nation of Edom, right? Which was basically, you know, anything outside or in Canaan, I guess you would. These the Hittites and the Edomites, they all had to be run out of Canaan. That was what they were supposed to do when they took the land of Canaan, is run all the bad people out. But I think I see more in Esau now that he just didn't care about what kind of life that he was really, I don't think he was living to please his parents, it didn't look like. But he was terribly upset because he didn't get that blessing.
Yeah.
But it was his own fault. It was a grave sin to sell his birthright. And, it was also a sin for Jacob to do him that way, basically as being the firstborn. Well, he accuses him in verse 36 of chapter 27 there, but he supplanted me these two times. He wouldn't have done that had Esau had been concerned for his parents and for what the firstborn was supposed to be, the example he should have been.
Yeah, I absolutely agree that Esau is has shown definitely a pattern of this not taking important things seriously, not taking significant things seriously or spiritual things seriously, or anything like that. I was just going after going along with. With what verse 8 is of chapter 28. Yet Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan did not please his father Isaac, so Esau went to Ishmael. And seemed, you know, I thought it was kind of suggesting more that he does want to get in the good graces of his father, you know, and he does want to please his father, but he just... You know, and this kind of goes along with this pattern of behavior. Is he's not strict, you know, and he's not very careful, and so he tries to do things that please Isaac, it seems, because of how laxed he is with everything in his life, where we see him. You know, continuing to make these mistakes.
I want to pile on Esau here.
Okay. Certainly, and this the idea of how Hebrews calls him the profane person is how he has rejected all the good things of God, how he has rejected the things that are significant. He's rejected things that are of value, and that of course that birthright was of great value because it was going to carry a blessing with it, and he cared not for these things, and it was because it was profane of him, and it's because he was profane, and so. Yeah.
When I go to Padana Ram, he didn't have to go to the household of Laban.
Right.
You know, go to Padana Ram.
I know it. He's definitely has a pattern of mistakes here in his life. So, what do we have? Beginning in verse 10 of chapter 28. Now Jacob went out to Beersheba and went toward Haran. So he came to a certain place and stayed there all night because the sun had set. And he took one of the stones of that place and put it at his head, and he lay down in that place to sleep. Then he dreamed, and behold, a ladder was set up on the earth, and its top reached to heaven, and there the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. Behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie I will give to you and your descendants. Also your descendants shall be as the dust of the earth. You shall spread abroad to the west and the east, to the north and the south. And in you and in your seed all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land. For I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you. So, this is a very significant moment in the life of Jacob. He's now left. He's going on his journey, and he is alone. You know, and he has set out to flee from Esau, in one sense, and to come to Laban to obtain a wife. Now, as he is out there, and it's interesting at this time that here he is, and he has nothing. You know, this is such a fascinating point where God could have talked to him about these things in many other occasions of his life, but on this one occasion where, you know, nobody's around. He doesn't have anybody. He's out of the house of his father and mother now. That's not his home. He can't be there. He can't live there. He would be killed if he remained there. He is a stranger. He has no one. He has no spouse at this time, and he is in a desolate place. You know, it's not like he found this city and a nice place to stay or a hotel or anything like that. He has absolutely nothing, and so there he sits. He's got a rock. You know, I mean, that's the most of his possessions. There is, he has found this rock, and he lays his head on a rock to sleep. Obviously, nothing. There's nothing ideal here about this situation, and he's at this point in his life where he truly is completely desolate for the time being. And it's at this point that he dreams. And this is God coming to him in a dream. You know, we see these kinds of things in especially in the Old Testament. Why do we see this? I think the book of Hebrews is a great points out this point in the very beginning of the book. Hebrews chapter 1 and verse 1 says, God, who at various times and in various ways spoke. All right? There are various ways that he spoke, he says, in times past. He says, but has in these last days spoken to us by his Son. And so that's how the book of Hebrews begins. And this is what we are seeing. You look all through Genesis, this isn't, you know, the kind of stuff, you know, that you see today. This is very different, very unique. The way that God will come and talk to Abraham, or, you know, Isaac, or, you know, even further back to Noah, the way he talked to him, or Adam and Eve, these kinds of things. So the writer of Hebrews points out that God, in various times, in various ways and manners, he spoke. And so this is one of those various ways and times in ages past in which he delivered and revealed his word and revealed his will. And so coming to Jacob in a dream as this, but even still we have to stop and say, this is unique because God could have just come directly to him and just said, you know, these blessings of Abraham, these promises to Abraham, I'm promising them to you. And he does that in a way, but he also paints this picture for Jacob. And the picture is that of this ladder set up on the earth, but the top of it reached the heavens. And we know that it reached all the way up. It wasn't just a tall ladder. It had to reach all the way up because there was travel going on the ladder, right? It says there were angels ascending upon the ladder and descending upon the ladder. So we have a pathway. We have a connection here clearly between heaven and earth. And heaven and earth is connected by this ladder. And so it is with this picture that we have God repeating the promises that he gave to Abraham, repeating them upon Jacob. And so our duty here, and we're out of time, but our task is to look at this picture. It's obviously the picture of the ladder, angels ascending, descending. Obviously the picture has to do with what God said in these promises. They must go together. So how do they go together? What of this picture being painted in the vision, what does it have to do with these promises that God is giving to Jacob that he originally gave to Abraham? So think about that, and then we'll discuss it next time around.